Hello, welcome back to Master of Disaster. Again, I'm Mark Bukowski. It has been a while since I have done a podcast. It's not because I don't want to. It's because I just need something to inspire me, or I need to find the time and not be lazy. So today I am both not going to be lazy, and I am also a little bit inspired to let you know what I'm thinking. And hopefully help those that may be stuck or that can listen to this and relate. You know, that's the reason I'm doing these. For me, it's great therapy for me. It's free therapy for me. And what gives me the biggest and greatest feeling, knowing that there's a chance that someone could listen to this and benefit from it. That's where I'm at. So I have yet to go back and listen to all of my podcasts. But for some reason, I decided to listen to the last one, which was number 4. And I talked about, you know, my addiction and the things that I did. And I kind of just cut it off right there and said, you know, we'll continue from there. So this will be my last podcast that I do by myself, because it's very difficult to sit in my little studio that I built and talk with nobody around. I reached out to a few people to see if they would become guests on my podcast. The first one being the first person that I ever helped get off from heroin. And he was more than happy to do it. He is now 11 years clean and doing great things. He's getting married. I haven't talked to him in a long time. So it was great to reach out to him. And I was very happy to hear that this is something he really wants to do. So I'm going to make this happen. It's going to happen soon. And before I do that, I just want to do this one last podcast. I just got back from being in Pittsburgh for the Frozen Four. And on my way to Pittsburgh, I listened to Nikki Six. He has a book out called The Heroin Diaries. And it's just a collection of all of his daily thoughts that he wrote down in a journal. And he released these to a book, and he reads them in these diaries. And as crazy as this sounds, my childhood and the way he grew was so similar to mine that this book had such a freaking profound impact on me. I found myself tearing up several times on the way to the games, and then yesterday on the way home, a part of this book just hit home so hard. I truly believe spiritually God worked through this book to give me the answers that I've searched for. I've been working on, you know, who I am, where I want to go, and what I'm doing for a long time. Like I said, I've been 11 years clean. I have no desire to go back to that road, but there's still so much of me that I am trying to figure out. And as of yesterday, it took 48 years, 5 months, and 11 days for something to click in my head. And the chances of Nikki Six ever hearing this podcast is slim to none. I probably have a better chance of hitting the lottery. But through his mistakes and his crazy, I mean crazy life, he actually found a way to help others, and he helped me. Listening to his books touched me in a way that I can't explain. Something just clicked, and I had to pull over, because on the way back, my wife saw me tearing up, and she got it out of me. She said, "What's wrong?" And you know, I wanted to bury it. I wanted to say nothing, and I wanted to dry those tears. But this feeling just was overwhelming. I've never experienced it. It took me. And we pulled over, and I talked, and I explained to her, "I think I know what is wrong." You know, we all have issues, and I'm not saying mine are better, worse, or the same as anyone else. I'm not in this for a pissing contest. I'm in this for myself and to help others. But listening to this podcast, listening to his book, it just struck me. You know, I've been talking for the last 4 podcasts about the things that I went through as a child and why I thought I was on drugs. And today I can tell you that I know why I took drugs, because drugs hid what I was looking for. I mean, it hit it in a way that I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to just sit there and wonder, why do I feel this way? Why do I have anxiety? Why am I scared of everything? Why am I scared of violence? You know, I knew why I was scared of violence. After seeing a therapist for 10 years, we worked all of that out. But there was still part of me to this day, to the yesterday, that I couldn't figure out. There's a certain sadness, or there are certain questions. There were things that I was looking for that I wasn't getting. And there was no way I was going to go back to drugs. I know that. I know that I'm never going to go back to drugs. But there's still part of me that had other ways, other than drugs, of filling that gap. And that's what we do as addicts or alcoholics or whatever it may be. We find something that masks a part of our life that we can't just put together. We basically create a false bridge to get us through that gap that's missing. And, you know, we have to figure out what that gap is before we can really move on in life. So, yes, I've been 11 years clean, no drugs, no alcohol, but I've also been 11 years still sad and trying to figure out what it is that's making me sad. I replaced drugs and alcohol by things like spending money, buying things that give me, you know, a great feeling that makes my dopamine levels skyrocket. I have a serious or had a serious, serious addiction to buying tools for my business that I didn't need. This is no joke. I rent a warehouse for tools that I don't need. My father retired 10 years ago or maybe longer. And when he retired with the same wrenches that I think he started with. And I, you know, in my little tool shed, which is a 6,000 square foot building, have about 21 cordless drills, you know, 5 chop saws, you know, 7 hole hogs. It's multiple tools of everything. And everything I bought was all so I could feel good. I just wanted to feel that euphoric feeling that I just generally don't have. And I didn't know why. So first of all, there's a few things I want to do in this podcast. I want to start by kind of picking up where I left off at the end of the last podcast. And then I want to get into what inspired me to get down here and do this today. I took the day off because I really wanted to get this word out there. So last week I left off with, you know, things that I was doing during my addiction. And the only way to get over your addiction is to give in to your disease. You have to own your disease. And if you can't do that, then you will never get through it. Again, I have a friend who is currently going through hell. You know, he's got 2 children and a wife that kicked him out. And he came to me 2 weeks ago. And I sat and I talked with him. And I talked with him in a way that I shouldn't have. I agreed with him. And I said, yep. And I said, I'm sorry to hear that you're going through this. That's not fair. They're not doing it right. And I did it because I am so afraid of hurting someone's feelings. And I always want to be or look like the good guy. And, you know, that's part of part 2 of this podcast that I'm going to talk about later that I figured out through Nikki Sixx's heroin diaries. That I don't need to be that person. I need to be honest with you and with myself. So if I could have that conversation over, or if there's any chance he's listening to this podcast, this is how that conversation should have went. And if you're listening, this is how it goes. You're sick. You have a disease. You have to give in to your disease. You have to admit that you are completely powerless to your disease. And the way you're talking to me right now, you are taking no accountability. You're saying that everything that has happened to you in your life is all because of someone else. Well, let me tell you right now, it isn't. It's because of you. You won't give in to your disease. You won't admit you're powerless. And until you can admit you're powerless, I want you to lose my number and I want you to forget who I am, because I am done. I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to talk to you, and I'm not going to let you be part of my life. I've come this far. I've gotten to be who I am by avoiding and staying out of situations that you're currently in. So if you can't do it, then I'm sorry. We can't be friends. I'll always be here for you, but until then, you need to get out of my truck, and you need to go figure it out. And I didn't do that, and I don't think I could have done it until, you know, I talk about what I figured out yesterday. But before I do that, I want to talk about what I did when I was an addict. Before I could admit that I was completely powerless to this disease. And how did I know I was powerless to this disease? Because like I said, I put my drugs before everyone. I did things looking back that just make me sick. But I always remind myself, without my disease, I could not be doing what I'm doing, and I couldn't be who I am today. My daughter came home from college 2 weekends ago, and my wife was cold, so she was wrapped up in a blanket. Thank the good Lord that we can laugh about this right now, and I am so happy that I made every mistake possible so my children won't. But my wife, you know, she was wrapped up in this blanket, and my daughter said, "Oh my God, I just had a flashback seeing you wrapped up in that blanket." And, you know, we were sitting at the dining room table just talking. And I said, "What do you mean?" You know, and inside this really, really hit home. And she said, she looks like me. All those nights that she used to get us out of bed, she would one by one wrap us in a blanket, take us down to our car seats, put us in the car, and we would go out looking for you. And this is 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and my wife did this probably 5 or 6 nights a week. And I looked at her and I said, "Do you remember those things?" And she said, "Oh, yes." She goes, "I remember. I remember seeing you, you know, at that house and Mom trying to get you in the car and you refused to go. And man, not get in that car with 2 kids in the back that I would give my life for." You know, my brother-in-law, who is an amazing guy, talked to me about, as parents, what we would do. We would jump on a grenade for our kids, and I truly would, but I wouldn't back then. And that's how strong and powerful it is when you're addicted or have an addiction to alcohol or drugs, or again, whatever it is. I'm just going to use the word addiction. It can be anything. I put this thing before my kids, and I am going to do this whole podcast without crying, I hope. But it's truly amazing that my wife stuck with me. It's truly amazing that my kids, they forgave me. And that's part of this podcast. We will get into that. And that is the power of forgiveness. You have to be able to forgive to move on. And that's something that took me 48 years, 5 months, and 11 days to figure out. And I'm 48 years old, so if you did the math, 48 years, 5 months, and 11 days was yesterday. Yes, I started hanging out with people that liked me, so I thought. They accepted me. They brought me in. They treated me like I was a friend, and it felt so good to be liked, and they liked me because I would spend money on them. We would run out of drugs, and I would be the first person to buy them. I remember coming downstairs from a good friend of mine who's currently dead from a drug overdose. Was good friends with him in high school. And when I went through, you know, I went 11 years on a drug addiction. I don't mean to jump around. 11 years of an opiate addiction. Out of those 11 years, at about year probably 9, is when I got into other drugs because of the people I was hanging out with that I thought were friends. And drugs led to alcohol, and alcohol led to more drugs, and etc. So I was always the person that wanted to be, like, coddled and loved and thought of as, wow, Mark just bought this. He is such a good guy. And that's the way I felt. And it felt good. And I wanted that. So I just thought I had friends that were the best. And I particularly remember one night, I was just out of my mind. It was probably 4 o'clock in the morning. We were all just sitting and hanging around in this little dumpy apartment. And we ran out of drugs. And I'm going to put this out there right now. You know, I had my opiate problems, but there was about a 6-month period at year 9 when I ran into these friends that my choice of drug turned into cocaine. That's the first time in my life I've ever said that to anybody, except my wife. And I'm putting it out there for everyone. Boy, does that hurt to hear myself say that. I was abusing cocaine, and I was abusing it hard. And there's so much of my life in those years that I was blaming everyone else, or I was blaming people for the reason my job was failing, my company was failing, we were losing my wife's car. I mean, things were bad. And, you know, I had a problem with drugs. And I could not admit that I was powerless, that I couldn't admit that, you know, I couldn't own this disease. In my head, I was just having fun. My excuse was, you know, fuck you. This is my wife I'm talking to. Fuck you. You have no friends. You have no idea what it's like to have friends. So go fuck off and I'll come home when I feel like it. I'm sick of your bullshit. You're always tracking me down. You always think I'm up to no good. I'm not doing anything wrong. Just go fuck off and go home. And that is my answer to every time she would come and look for me. You know, in my eyes, she was annoying and looking for me because she was insecure. I could not comprehend any other reason for her to look for me at 4 o'clock in the morning after I haven't answered my phone for 2 days. And I would come outside and speak to her with 2 kids sitting in the back seat with their eyelids, you know, barely open because they just got taken out of bed to find dad. And that is really, really sad. But I am in a better position. My kids, thankfully, understand that I was in a very bad place. I've talked with them, and we've figured out a whole bunch of stuff. So things spiraled out of control for me when I started hanging out with these people. I thought I had it figured out. One of the guys that I hung out with most ended up dying from a cocaine overdose. He was found dead. One morning after partying, he was found dead on a couch by another friend. So we celebrated the life of this person, you know, that night by partying our face off and doing lots of drugs. I was putting myself in the worst situations so many times looking back. You know, I have kids in the back seat all the time. I have my wife looking for me. I have my wife calling her sisters. You know, they're calling me. And, you know, it was a nightly occurrence for me to shut my phone off, not answer it, and go home when it was good for me. And again, I was powerless. I had a disease. And when you are stuck in that rut, you cannot get out of it until you admit and beg and please. So anyways, yeah, I couldn't admit it. I couldn't do it. So, you know, people always use this term rock bottom. He has to hit rock bottom before he's going to get help. He's going to have to hit rock bottom. Well, I don't believe in the term rock bottom because every day was rock bottom. You know, this started out with me taking opiates for a wrist that went from opiates. My doctor couldn't do it anymore for my wrist. I had a back problem, to taking opiates for my back, to getting a doctor in Syracuse that would write me a script for everything, to a point that I took more drugs than you can imagine per week to a point that I told myself I would never, ever sniff a drug in my life. I would never, ever snort a drug. That wouldn't happen, to a point that I snorted drugs. And you got to remember, this is coming from a guy that was in high school who didn't even drink. I was against every, I just didn't drink. I didn't do anything. I hung out with the closest group of guys you can imagine. One of them that I still touch base with every day since high school. And we didn't drink in high school. I didn't touch anything. I was against drugs and drinking. So I'm going from that to, you know, buying cocaine on the streets, to partying every night, to snorting opiates until I was blue in the face. I mean, I've gone to the emergency room probably a handful of times because I thought that that was it. I was ODing, and they brought me in. They kept me hooked up to monitors, and, you know, I built a relationship with the ER doctor. You know, he knew what was going on, but he was always willing to make sure that I wasn't fucking dying. My wife called the ER and begged them not to give me any more medication, and there's nothing they could do about it. So this is a very powerful disease. You know, I'm literally a guy that went from refusing to take an aspirin in high school, not drinking a beer, to speedballing, you know, snorting OxyContin and snorting cocaine together so you get a high and a low. And then, you know, this rock bottom thing, that's rock bottom, but the next day is rock bottom, and things just snowball, and they get worse, and they get worse, and they worse. So there is no rock bottom. There's only a point that you own your disease, you admit you're powerless, and you pray for a higher power to help you. And I truly believe in these 12 steps, and I think the first three are the most important. I think they all go together, and without owning up to what you've got, admitting that it's completely got control of you, you're powerless to this disease, believing in a higher power to help you, I don't believe you can get through it. And your higher power doesn't have to be God. It can be anything you want. You have to give in to your disease. I have all these people reaching out to me about my friend right now saying, you know, his wife left him. He's not going to see his kids. This is rock bottom. And it's not rock bottom because he still thinks that there's nothing wrong with him. I talked to him in the truck. I did give in. I played his role. He said, these people want me to go to rehab because I take a pill. These people think that I need treatment because I drink gin and beer every day. Give me a fucking break. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And that's complete horseshit. I should not have been that way, like I said. But he is not willing to admit A, that he has any type of disease, and B, that he's completely powerless. And it's very easy to see that he has nothing. This disease has completely consumed his life. His job is gone. His wife is gone. His kids are gone. He's got nothing. But him, on the inside looking out, it's him thinking everybody's against him. Everybody thinks he's an asshole. It's all my fault. Oh, you know, his wife told me that the night he got kicked out, he called me to stay the night in my basement. And I couldn't tell him, no, you are not staying in the night in my basement because you have a serious problem. I told him that my daughter was home and she has a friend here and we're just about to go away. So I was kind of a coward there. And if I could go back, this is just a few weeks ago. If I could go back, I would do it all over again. So anyway, I have a lot more to say on this podcast, and I did say a lot more, but unfortunately I went back to do a little editing since I figured out how to do it, and only 23 minutes of 150 minutes of talking was actually recorded. So I am going to make this a two-part podcast before I have my first guest on. So I'm going to end this today, and I will continue with the second part to this podcast that talks about all of the things that I learned through Nikki Six, his documentary, or his diaries, his heroin diaries. And I'll go from there to explain what it is that I figured out and how I closed that gap. Until next time, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you later.